Welcome to Motivated to Lead podcast, helping you become a better leader. I'm your host, Mark Quintenstein. Hi, everyone. Thanks again for joining us for our podcast this week. My name is Mark Klingsheim with SEMA Partners. Each week, we interview leaders and they share lessons learned from their careers. Our goal is to help you become a better leader. We have been revisiting a few conversations from some of our previous guests. If you are new to our podcast, go back and listen to some of those previous episodes. This week, our guest is Wayne Baker. He is a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. He has written several books, and he is seen as an expert in the area of leadership. And he is also one of the directors for the Center for Positive Organizations. He's written a book entitled All You Have to Do Is Ask. And we're going to be talking about that book and just some of the things that he's learned in his career working with leaders, and looking forward to today's conversation with Wayne. And Wayne, we've interviewed some colleagues from the Ross School of Business in the last few months. Your name came up several times as somebody that we should talk with. So appreciate you taking some time out to talk with us today.
Oh, well, thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
Great. Well, I guess first off, can you give us just a little bit of your story, a little bit of your background?
Sure. Yeah, so I'm a professor at the Ross School of Business, where I've been now for 25 years, teaching courses on management and leadership. I'm also faculty director at our Center for Positive Organizations. Now, how do you build and sustain thriving workplaces? But it's interesting, I have a PhD in sociology, but my undergraduate degree is in finance. Mm-hmm. And I like to say that I got confused and did it out of order, because usually you have an undergraduate degree in sociology, you can't find a job, and then you go get your MBA. You know. And so, but it turned out to be kind of a fortuitous combination, putting these two things together, like sociology and finance and economics, I think really gave me some insights on some new lines of research that I could do. I live in Ann Arbor, Michigan, this year will be our 30th wedding anniversary. So,
well, congratulations! That's a milestone for sure. Well, I ask this question of almost every guest that we have on. Knowing what you know now, if you were able to go back and talk to a 20-year-old Wayne, what advice would you give him?
If I went back, I would have told myself to slow down. Because I finished high school early, and I finished college early, so I was done with everything when I had just turned 20. And I was, you know, applying to graduate school, and I was, now I said, well, what's the rush? You know, I should have taken a little bit more time to travel the world, I think. You know, I was able to do some of that later on, but it's not a race, you know, and you don't have to do everything quickly. So that's what I would change.
So I know you've just dropped off or you've sent your son off to college recently. I know school is going to look different this year for a lot of students, and this is kind of a definitely unusual time in our history. You've done a lot of work as far as with leaders and trying to assist them to maybe think a little bit differently. Any thoughts around kind of what we're experiencing, and just some thoughts you've had, maybe things that you've encouraged leaders to do during this time?
Well, I've done a lot of work on generosity. How do you create a generous workplace? So one of the things that I've learned is that most people are willing to help if they're asked, but everyone struggles with asking. It turns out that the request or the ask is the key to the giving-receiving cycle. So if you want to build a workplace culture of generosity, the most important thing is to put in place practices, norms, and expectations that will encourage people to ask for what they need, because it'll bring out the natural generosity in everyone. Now, if we think about that in our current environment, you know, many of us have been working remotely for months now. It looks like that's going to continue for months more at least. Right. It's a time when people feel isolated, they feel disconnected. And so now I think it's more important than ever before to reach out and to make requests. You know, request for a Zoom meeting with a friend, reconnect mm-hmm. with people that you went to college with, set up a time where you can chat with them. So I think it's really important to do that more now than ever before.
Now, you have a new book that came out in January. It's entitled All You Have to Do Is Ask, and the subtitle is How to Master the Most Important Skill for Success. Tell me a little bit about just kind of your journey to writing that book, and then we want to definitely kind of jump in and talk a little bit about some of the principles that you talk about in the book.
21 years ago, my wife Cheryl and I created an activity called the Reciprocity Ring. It's kind of a generosity activity. It's been done now by a couple hundred thousand people all around the world. It's been done in different languages. It seems to tap into a human universal. And it's going to sound simpler than it actually is, but it's an opportunity, kind of a structured, guided process where people make a request for something that they need, but they spend most of their time helping other people. And what they find is that the people they help are not the people who help them. It's more of this indirect or this generalized form of reciprocity. Now, when we created this activity 21 years ago, I always started with the same little lecture on the importance of being generous, the importance of giving, of helping. But you know, Mark, that was never the problem. You know, people were incredibly generous, but everyone struggled with asking. They struggled with coming up with a request. Many people said, you know, I've always wanted to be in a room and given permission to ask for anything I want, but I can't think of a thing. I'm drawing a blank. And so that was the initial insight that the request is the key to the giving-receiving cycle. And over time, we developed additional tools. I collected those that others had done. And I said, you know, I kind of have a toolbox of all the things that you can do individually, as a team, or as an entire organization to institute this kind of process. And so that's the book. It's that toolbox of all the ways that an individual all the way up to an entire organization can create this culture of generosity where people are asking for what they need while they're generously helping other people.
So somebody coming in, and especially with, we have a lot of newer leaders that maybe are leading their first team. How do you build that culture of, you know, so that people are generous with each other and within a team? What are some things that somebody could do as a leader?
I think there's two things that a new leader could do. One is that they should be a role model of the behavior that they want to see in other people. So if you want to create this kind of culture where, you know, you're using resources very efficiently, people are finding answers that they need right away. They're not struggling working on a problem for a long period of time. You know, they get advice and input from other people. They're all more successful. But a new leader is often very reluctant to admit that they don't know something. But as a new leader, there's a lot of things that they don't know. They don't know how to do. They need input, but they're very reluctant to ask for it. So I think you've got to overcome that hurdle. You've got to role model that behavior by not only making it okay, but also encouraging and rewarding people who are asking for what they need. So that would be the first part. And then the second part is to use some of the tools that I talk about in the book to create an expectation around asking and giving. So I'll give you a real quick example. So everyone knows the daily stand-up. You know, where everyone stands up, gets in a circle, and you have to say three things. You know, here's what I worked on yesterday, here's what I'm working on today, and here's some help that I could use, right? So if you know that that's expected, that you need to ask for what you need, and you know that everyone else is going to do it as well, it normalizes the whole process. It creates a psychologically safe environment in which to ask. In fact, not asking is letting the group down because you're violating the group's norms. So as a new leader, I would say, you know, the stand-up is only one, but there's a whole bunch of them. And by the way, stand-ups are done now remotely through Zoom. Right. They work just as well. But, you know, to use one of those tools, one of those team practices, and have people use it on a regular basis. In the beginning, people are going to be a little reluctant. But long as you are, I call it gently relentless, that you just gently but firmly keep having people doing it. You know, either day after day for a stand-up or once a week using one of the other tools, and you'll create that culture in which people feel that it's expected and normal to ask for what they need. And they're going to find out that they're a lot more effective and creative when they do.
Are there examples of maybe groups that you've studied, organizations, companies that maybe didn't have that, and that somebody, you know, started the initiative and were able to change the culture? Or do you think some cultures aren't able to evolve into more of that generous type of culture?
Well, I think any workplace can evolve into a more generous culture. I write about the idea of, I call it the behavior first principle. So one model of organizational change is that we need to change people's attitudes, their values, and their beliefs, and then they'll behave differently. So, I mean, I think that has some merit to it. But what we've found is that if you focus on changing people's behaviors first, then they will update and revise their attitudes and their beliefs. So I've had a lot of groups that I've worked with in various companies where they'll say, you know, I don't believe this activity is going to work. And I'll say, it's not about belief. I said, would you at least do it? Would you go through the motions? Would you follow the steps? And they say, okay, I'll do that. So again, it's starting with behavior, not trying to change how people are thinking about it. And at the end, they invariably come back and say, oh, now I get it. Now I understand. So they've changed their belief about it because they've actually experienced it. And so if you start with a behavior first principle and use any of the tools that I write about, and you're gently relentless about it, you're like almost guaranteed of success.
So when you're looking at, and you probably have coached executives in this area as they're leading teams and trying to, make a positive impact and lead people. You're the leader, and you mentioned that sometimes leaders, and I think probably even later in your leadership, that it's hard to ask for help because at a certain point in your career, they're thinking you've got it all figured out, and you maybe don't. You're not the expert on this area. What would you encourage somebody that maybe is a little bit later in their career to maybe has been kind of pushed back on that, asking for help just because they figure that everybody thinks I know it all?
Well, I think no matter where someone is in their career, if they're later in their career and they're in a senior leadership position, they still have needs. They're still going to make better decisions by inviting input from other people. And so you've got to be that role model of the behavior that you want. The other is that you can join some of these groups of similar people. I call it a brain trust. So you need to model the behavior in your own organization. You need to recognize when people do the same, that they're asking for what they need, that they're being generous and helping other people. But if you join an external group, say a group of CEOs, or there's the YPO, used to be called the Young Presidents Organization. Mm-hmm. There are lots and lots of organizations like that where you have senior level leaders from different organizations that come together. And in those environments, it's a safe place to ask for what you need, to admit that you actually don't have all the answers. So I wrote an article in Leader to Leader earlier this year where I said that every leader should be a CHS, a chief help seeker. Mm-hmm. And instead of you want to be the chief executive, but you need to be the chief help seeker. You know, that you're going to make better decisions by inviting input from other people, co-creating solutions with other people, and you're modeling the behavior that you want to see in everyone else.
So as you're thinking of people that have had an impact on your life around generosity and around some of these topics, are there some people that have kind of been influential as far as to help you see things differently?
Oh, absolutely. There's a long list. But the person who comes to mind immediately is my friend and colleague, Jim Malazzi. So Jim is retired now, but he was the CEO of Prudential Real Estate and Relocation. And he took over that huge firm when it was failing. They were losing, $20, $30, $40 million a year. Customers hated them, and their best people were leaving in droves. So he started to institute a lot of these different principles. And in short order, within 2 years, the company was profitable. It was winning J.D. Power Service Awards, and it was attracting and keeping the best talent. So how did he do it? So he actually had participated in the reciprocity ring with me in a couple of years prior when he was at a different part in the Prudential organization. But what I've really learned from him and what I've been inspired by is that he took the principle and really ran with it. So I'll give you an example. In one of his first keynotes to all the associates, there's all around the globe. So they're headquartered in Scottsdale, and so they're at a big convention center. But, they've got associates from all around the world that are beaming in to be a part of this. And he did two things that were, out of the ordinary for a CEO. Not only did he state the company goals, he stated his personal goals. Mm. And one of his personal goals was to not miss any key events with his two daughters at his home in Connecticut. Now, he's spending a lot of time in Scottsdale and other places, right? And so when people knew that, they could support him when there was an important event that he needed to get home to. The other thing he did right in that meeting is that he pulled out his cell phone and he held it up. He says, I have a request to make. And there is a collective groan in the audience because they're expecting what always happens. Turn your cell phone off, right?
Right.
And he said, I want you to turn your cell phone on and I want you to either email or text. And he put up an email address and a number to text. And what I want you to do is I want you to email or text three great ideas for the best way to find a new client or keep a client. And so now thousands of people are doing this. And in the course of about 36 hours, because they went through and they had some duplicates, and of course they had some silly ones, but they came up with over 2,000 high quality ideas of how to keep a customer or to get a new customer. And it became such a tradition that they did this every year. But that's taking that power. First of all, he made himself vulnerable by revealing his personal goals, not just the company goals. And he used a practice, right? He made the request, you know. And in fact, he says that the ultimate sign of a positive organization is people asking for what they need, people asking for help. That's the number one criteria.
Great. Yeah, we just actually, Jim's podcast came out today. So if you haven't listened to that, definitely do that. And you shared some things I didn't know about his background. He didn't toot his own horn in our conversation. So he had some great thoughts that he shared around that and your impact as far as on influencing him in that area. On the personal side of things, you know, generosity in a family, in a home. How have you practiced that personally in your home? Has that made an impact as far as kind of on the culture of your family too?
Oh, absolutely. I try to practice what I preach, you know, at work and at home. So I just have one son. You know, we talked a moment ago that he headed off to college just this week. So we're new empty nesters. And dealing with all the emotional up and downs for that, as others can empathize with and have gone through themselves. But I wanted him to always ask questions and to ask for help when he needed it. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that my wife and I were just so pleased and proud that consistently his teachers in high school, because he just graduated from high school, was saying that he has no problem of advocating for himself, of asking for what he needs, of raising his hand. And often he would do it on behalf of the entire class. Like, he would hear kind of what was going on in the classroom and he would meet with the teacher and it was a request having to do with, say, improving the culture of the classroom or something that people were afraid to come forward with, and he would talk about it. And so we've always felt that, you know, was such a great skill that he learned. And along with that is the other side of it, is to help people when you can, to be generous, to not keep track of who helps you. It's just, if you could help people, to help them, and when you have a need, make the request.
Great. No, it's, you know, I've heard some of your TED talk and some of the things that you've shared in the past, and you've got some great stories. Encourage people to check that out. But outside of work, what are some things that you do to kind of recharge?
So I live in Michigan, which is essentially two peninsulas surrounded by lakes, right? The Great Lakes. And so we are very avid sailors and boaters. And so we've sailed Lake Huron, Lake Michigan, up in Canada, a little bit into Lake Superior. In fact, we're getting prepared for another trip later in the month. And next year, we want to start what's called the Great Loop. So so you're in Minnesota, right? You know, and so you could actually get to the Great Lakes, right? And if you could do that, you could actually circumnavigate the entire eastern part of the country. There's a way to work yourself down through Chicago, down to the Gulf of Mexico, you know, take a left around Florida, go up the East Coast, and then come in, say, New York and the Erie Boat Canal and come back. And cross your wake is what it's called. So that's our long-term ambition. But yeah, we're crazy about sailing and boating. I think we could actually live on the water.
Yeah, you've got a great story about your boating trip. I think that was one of your TED Talks, and with the whole concept of paying it forward. Tell that story. I think that's a great story.
Sure, I'd be glad to. Yeah, every boater, every sailor has needed help and assistance from other people because things happen. You lose your anchor, or your engine conks out, or something, right? And so the three of us, my wife and our son, and he was probably only about 12 at the time, we were up in the North Channel, which is above Lake Huron. It's all in Canada. It's a very, very remote area. Very difficult navigation, so you really need to be very careful about navigating because you could be in 20 feet of water and 10 feet to the left, there's only 2 feet, and 10 feet to the right, there's only 3 feet of water. You're coming down a little, canal, a natural canal in the granite formation. So you have to be very careful. We actually went to a very remote place where hardly anyone goes. It was just incredible. It was idyllic. And so it's a sailboat, but it has a motor in it, a diesel engine. And that's how you would navigate through all these little channels. You wouldn't sail through that. And this was the captain's fault, is that I failed to recharge the batteries enough because we had been there a couple of days without running the engine sufficiently. And the morning we were going to leave, I went to start the engine and it was dead. I couldn't start the engine. And there's no way to sail off. I talked to some of my sailing friends about, do you think we could have sailed out of there? And they just start laughing, right? Because there was just so many little twists and turns, you couldn't do it. So we're like stranded in this Canadian paradise. And I felt really responsible, particularly, with our son, who was 12 at the time. I'll never forget, he came up, we got up, my wife and I got very early to leave. He came up and he said, I thought we were leaving today. And I said, yeah, I thought we were leaving today too. And I explained what had happened. But then I remembered that there's a radio station actually comes in on your marine radio called the Little Cruisers Net, and it's out of Little Current on Manitoulin Island. You'd have to look that up to see where that is. But it's for the boating community, and at 9 o'clock every morning, Roy Eaton, the Canadian, has this broadcast, and you get it through your marine radio. These days, he's doing it through Zoom as well. And he starts every program the same way. At 9 o'clock in the morning in July and August, basically, does anyone need help? Is there a medical emergency, whatever? So I knew that, and I had enough electricity to power the radio. I learned later on that we were so far away that another boater picked it up, my signal, and actually relayed it down to him. And he came back, asked for our position. I gave him our latitude and longitude. He put it out, and that was it. But hours later, I see another boat on the horizon. And there was another fellow sailor, someone who I didn't know, a complete stranger, working his way towards us. He came, had a spare battery, hooked it up in my boat, got the engine started, even stayed in radio contact with me all the way until we got all the way back out. Mm. And it was really the kindness of strangers. I've got a couple of stories like that. And every sailor who's going to be honest with you is going to have stories like that too, of something that happened where they were helpless and they really needed to make a request for something that they needed.
It's a great story. So I know you've written books. Are there any books that you recommend to leaders that they should put on their list?
Well, I was thinking about that question and I came up with four.
Okay.
I could do those quickly. Two were books that really influenced me when I finished my PhD. And so these would be very academic, but one was Charles Darwin and The Origin of Species. And the reason that was so influential, it was just amazing how he collected data. He was such an empiricist, and he had a method that he made a special note of writing down disconfirming evidence, something that challenged his working theory about the way in which nature actually worked, about nature's principles, because he knew the mind had a way of forgetting disconfirming evidence. So it was really good to read about that if you're going to actually go out and be a scientist or a social scientist like me. The other was Hermann Hesse. The book is called Magister Ludi, although it translates originally as The Glass Bead Game. It's a fictional story that takes place centuries in the future, where there is a society of like pure intellectuals, and the epitome of what they do is design this game. right? So it's like another kind of intellectual kind of thing. So to balance all of that, and in the business world, there's two books that have been very helpful. One is The Great Game of Business by Jack Stack, where he talks about open book management. Once I learned about that, I teach all of my MBA students about open book management. A number of them have used it to turn around failing family businesses. It's been incredibly powerful. And then the other one would be, there's a series of books by Ari Weinzweig, who is the co-founder and CEO of Zingerman's Community of Businesses. It's a James Beard award-winning chefs and authors and all that, but it's all a community of businesses. They're all related. There's a restaurant, there's a bakery, there's a farm, a candy manufacturer, you know, a bakehouse. I mean, all kinds of things. It's a $65 million a year business in this relatively small area of Ann Arbor, Michigan. Very, very high quality, incredible food, incredible service, a very positive organization. And so Ari's written a series of books he calls A Lapsed Anarchist Guide to Business. And so he was a graduate from the University of Michigan, where he studied Russian history with a specialty in the anarchists. And so he's taken some of those principles, which actually turned out to be more positive than you might think, but he's created a business in which people love working there. It's a thriving workplace. It's a positive organization. He lives those principles, incredible customer service and incredible food.
So as you're thinking about leaders, and is there any parting advice that you'd give to a new or up and coming leader?
Yeah, so in my book, I write about some of the common obstacles or barriers to asking for what you need, present a whole bunch of tools about how you can, you know, implement these kinds of practices. But I found, even after all that, even after all the evidence that I have, sometimes people are still reluctant. So I have a little mantra that I think is helpful for someone who wants to try this out, who wants to make a change. And I call it join, give, ask. So join means that you join something. So if you're an employee, it could be you join an employee resource group or an ad hoc committee or something else. You join something. If you're a leader, maybe join a group or a network of other leaders, or join your alumni organization, your local alumni organization, you know, join a community board, whatever it might be. But it's to join something. You want it to be something that you care about, that you're passionate about. That's important. You join something. Then listen for opportunities to help other people, to give to other people. After you've done that, you'll then feel that you have the privilege of asking. And since you've been generous in helping other people, they'll be super motivated to help you as well. So join, give, ask, I think would be something that you could implement as a way of trying out some of these ideas, and then updating your beliefs based on the evidence that you collect from your own experience.
Great, great thoughts. Yeah, Wayne, I've read that you're a part of a project that is called Givitas. Is that right?
Yep, that's right. So Givitas is a combination of giving and civitas, which is Latin for community. And so we created a platform, Givitas, built around the principles in my new book. So it's a platform in which people ask for what they need and generously help other people. We have a number of free open access Givitas communities that anyone can join. They can see how it works. They can make a request for something that they need, look for opportunities to help other people. And if you go to giveandtakeinc.com, so giveandtakeinc.com, you could find those Givitas communities, and I invite people to join them. In fact, I used them when I was writing my latest book. You know, I needed a new example or a new practice, and I would post that request. People were incredibly helpful and generous. I met people from all over as a result of that, and many of them are now featured as stories in my book.
Great resource. Definitely will encourage people to check that out. How else would somebody learn more about what you're doing?
Well, I love hearing from people, so you can find me on LinkedIn very easily. You can go to the website for my book. So it's all you have to do is ask.com. So it's the book title.com. And you can read more about the book there. And there's an audio book. There's also a Kindle version and so forth. But there's a lot of free resources that I would invite people to look at and to use. There's an assessment that I have in the book, but we created a digital version of it that's free on the website. And if you take that assessment, it's going to give you a score on your propensity to ask and your propensity to help or to give. And you'll see, you'll get a nice customized report that will show where you are relative to other people who have taken the assessment. So it's really an eye-opener. It only takes like 2 or 3 minutes to actually take the assessment. There's a free learning map of the entire process, very colorful map. I invite people to download it and to freely share it with other people. And I have lots of podcasts, articles that I've written that are open access as well. And when our podcast comes out, we'll put it up there as well.
Well, this has been a lot of fun, Wayne. I appreciate your thoughts and wish you continued success with your new book. Look forward to seeing what you write next.
Well, great. Well, thank you, Mark. And it's been great having this opportunity to chat with you.
Thank you for listening to the Motivated to Lead podcast. Please subscribe on iTunes. You can also see a video version of this interview at motivatedtolead.com. This podcast is brought to you by SEMA Partners, helping you find your next great leader.